The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Wait a minute. Do you still think politics is boring? Well, not when you can say fun words like caucus. Yes, it's fun words like caucus and more. With the intellectual, intersexual, and intersectional, Nicole Sandler on NicoleSandler.com.
I was about to start with a video, and I just lost my video. Where did it go to? Did I close it? Oh, man. Oh, there it is. Okay, here we go. Take it away, Freedom Toast.
Wow, look at this. Hi, how are you guys? Good to see you. We're not allowing the pronouns. Like, you can't force these kids to be choosing pronouns. They want, like, a second grader to pick a pronoun.
How come you're not taking questions from voters?
Stop coming up to me, talking to me. What are you talking about? I'm not here murdering with people. Are you fine?
Are you okay, Governor?
No, he is not.
All right, ladies and gentlemen.
To speak and he makes me ill. You do run, you do run. Somebody told me it would get worse still. You do run, you do run. Yeah, DeSantis made me ill. Yes, it got worse still. Please send the squad back home. If you run, if you run. The press he thinks that he should get. Boo, run, boo, run. He thinks God made a phone, but I said not yet. Boo, run, boo, run. Yeah, he's big with blah, blah, blah. Yes, he flopped in Iowa. Said it out to Florida. Boo, run, boo, run.
The wokeness, the woke ideology.
Florida is where woke goes to die.
That's where you gotta die.
You seem to like the funny of his Nazi friends. You do run, you do run. He seems to think his needs could justify all ends. You do run, you do run. He hates all people who are LGBTQ.
Oh, yeah.
You do run, you do run. They scare more than atom bombs or great whites do. They do run, they do run. Yeah, his friends are all swastikas at all their bars. Scares the kids who run for home. You do run, you do run. He thinks he's cool for being cruel to refugees. Woohoo, run, woohoo, run. Someday soon we're gonna stop his sleeves. Yeah, you run, yeah, you run. Yeah, the man is bad. Crooked and incompetent.
No, not all that's BS. No, totally BS. Yep. Who said that? How would they know me? Okay, think about that. Do you honestly believe that's credible?
Not you, Ron. Not you, Ronald McDonald. All right, well, welcome to a Wednesday, everybody. A little ditty about our so-called governor, who looked so manly, didn't he, lording over the hurricane. Yeah, he looked about as manly as the CNN reporter in the middle of Tampa.
All right,
wait,
so,
hold on. I just got to show you this. So, as someone who has been through a few hurricanes and a few earthquakes, my share of natural disasters, I don't understand. There was a lot of news today. Rudy Giuliani liable for his actions regarding Shay Moss and Ruby Freeman. Still has to stand trial for it, but it's basically for damages. What he did to those two women is now, I'll share with you the actual story. So we know that I'm not, making shit up, because I'm not a Republican. What can I tell you? And so there was some good news today. And, I don't turn on CNN these days. And MSNBC, when I turned it on, all they were covering was the storm. Well, I get it. Hurricane Idalia. What kind of a name is Idalia? Anyway, Hurricane Idalia made landfall near Keaton Beach, Florida. Now, thank you, Idalia, because if you're going to make landfall, pick a swampy area on the unpopulated northwestern coast of Florida where nobody lives. Maybe a couple of dozen people lived there. It hit right where it should hit, in an unpopulated swampy part of Florida. And then it cut a swath through like south of Tallahassee. It missed Jackson. I mean, we in Florida couldn't have asked for anything better. And now it's downgraded to, one or a tropical storm. It's already got it through Florida because it was moving pretty quickly, unlike some of the recent storms that sat parked, like over parts of Louisiana for days or parts of Texas for days. This went right through. And, there's some damage, I'm sure. But does it really warrant wall-to-wall coverage?
Thank you, Tamara. Tamara says Idalia was the maid's name in Driving Miss Daisy. It's been a few years since I saw that movie, but wow. Okay, I guess they ran out of, Ida was taken. So Idalia? Okay. Irma? Irene? If it had to be a woman's name. Elise with an I? I don't know. Whatever. I'm wasting too much time on the name. It's a silly name, but, maybe they're running out of names. Perhaps. Anyway, they're not running out of reporters, though, at CNN. So I'm just, no comment necessary here. Except, really? So, Tampa Bay caught a pass. They got lucky. The storm hit much further north. So what they were expecting in terms of a direct hit, thankfully, didn't happen. And they had some flooded roadways. And apparently a major roadway in Tampa was flooded. Iris, there you go. Okay. So that said, if you're listening to an audio stream and don't see the video, you're kind of lucky. Because I'm going to show you a live shot from CNN standing in the middle of a street that's completely covered with water, a main thoroughfare in Tampa, and some guys are going by. Now, you'll hear the reporter says they're kayaking. Just know that the vessel they are on is in no way, shape, or form a kayak.
All right, Sarah, so we're going to step away from the seriousness of this storm just one second. You've got to bear with me because this is something you don't see every day. Guys, what are you doing? Literally, this is a very new way to beat rush hour traffic on Boulevard in Tampa.
It's Bayshore
These
Boulevard.
Guys are kayaking.
They're not kayaking.
Down this major
it is not a kayak.
Tampa over my shoulder here. I mean, look at that. I don't want to minimize the serious nature of this storm, but this is what people are dealing with in Tampa as we speak.
They were going down the street that was more of a river, and it looked like a dinosaur raft. It was not a kayak. But I guess these days it doesn't take much to be on CNN. I think that deserves a... oh, shoot. I don't even have my Wallo sound handy. That deserves a... Yeah. It was some kind of dinosaur blow-up raft thing. And it's a floating toy, right? Kayak
Someone talk to this guy. That wasn't a kayak. Anyway, I told you there was good news today. So let's get to some of that, shall we? If you notice the, you know, each day I do like a show card, a graphic for the show. And yes, today, Will Bunch will be here. Will Bunch, national columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, who, you know, it's always worth reading Will Bunch. But if you did not see his column from, what day was it? It was 27th. When was the 27th? Sorry, I'm a bit discombobulated today. Sunday. I guess it was in the Sunday, his Sunday column. Well, then you're in luck because I'm going to share it with you before Will gets here. So let me get through this other news, good news, fairly quickly so I can share this column with you, because he hit the nail on the head exactly. And he said it better. Will Bunch is a great writer. And so you really should read him. But the first bit of good news from today, maybe the only bit of good news, but it's good news nonetheless, is the headline reads, "Judge rules Giuliani defamed Georgia election workers, order sanctions." Yeah. The evil Rudolph Giuliani, you know, yesterday we showed his apartment, his co-op in Manhattan that's for sale, $6.5 million. A federal judge has ruled that the federal judge, being Beryl Howell, entered a default judgment against Rudy Giuliani as a straight-up sanction for his failure to provide necessary documentation to the plaintiffs, and therefore holding him liable for defaming Shay Moss and Ruby Freeman, the two poll workers, Georgia election workers, who were defamed is too mild a word as to what Giuliani and the former guy did to these two women. Giuliani will still go to trial in D.C. federal court on the amount of monetary damages he owes to Ruby Freeman and her daughter, Shay Moss. But Howell has already ordered him to pay roughly $132,000 in sanctions between his personal and business assets for his failures to turn over relevant information, not for being the fucking asshole that he was and putting these women's lives in danger by lying about them in a disgusting manner. Not that there's any other manner, but still. This is because he continuously denied it would not comply with the judge's orders. The judge said those failures to hand over the relevant information, combined with Giuliani's own admissions, compelled her to rule without a trial that he defamed both women, intentionally inflicted emotional distress on them as part of a civil conspiracy, and owes punitive damages. I like that, those words, in this instance, punitive damages. Last month, as part of the wrangling over the records he had failed to share, Giuliani agreed not to contest the fact that he made false and defamatory claims about the two poll workers. But in the same filings, he said he was not giving up the right to argue that his comments were constitutionally protected speech.
Bullshit.
That did not... Wait, I lost my place. Constitutionally protected speech that did not damage, that did not cause damage?
Bullshit.
Along with other defenses. On Wednesday, Howell said the admission had, quote, more holes than Swiss cheese, and that Giuliani was trying to, quote, bypass the discovery process and a merits trial at which his defenses may be fully scrutinized and tested in our judicial system's time-honored adversarial process, and to delay such a fair reckoning by taking his chances on appeal, end quote. But then, she said, Giuliani cannot, quote, have his proverbial cake and eat it too.
That's right. In case you don't remember what he said about Ruby and Shay, he repeatedly claimed in the weeks after the 2020 election that misleading security footage from Georgia showed Freeman and Moss bringing in, quote, suitcases full of fake votes for Joe Biden. Those claims were debunked quickly by election officials in Georgia, who explained that the so-called suitcases were regular ballot boxes and that nothing, repeat, zero, nothing untoward had occurred. But Giuliani and others continued to accuse the two of malfeasance. In response, they both received death threats and were forced into hiding. But wait, there's more. Because Giuliani failed to preserve emails, text messages, and social media account information from the time period when he made those accusations, Howell said, the judge said, Freeman and Moss are severely hampered in their ability to prove his statements were intentionally false and part of a broader conspiracy rather than merely negligent. Among the messages Giuliani failed to preserve and produce, according to the court record, is a December 7th, 2020 text he sent in response to a Trump advisor's request for, quote, best examples of election fraud that we've alleged that's super easy to explain. Doesn't necessarily have to be proven, but does need to be easy to understand. You know why that is, right? That is because, hold on, I just redid this entire wall. And now I don't know where anything is. Come on, where are you? It's worth the wait. Oh, here it is. Because
I love the poorly educated.
Yeah, we know you do. Let's see. It doesn't necessarily have to be proven, but has to be easy to understand. According to the records, Giuliani replied by highlighting the Georgia video. Trump went on to reference the video in meetings with top Justice Department officials and in a phone call with Georgia's Secretary of State, during which the former guy asked for the state official to just find 11,780 votes. The plaintiffs became aware of large gaps in what Giuliani provided because of records received from others involved. According to the court record, Giuliani claimed that he lost access to much of his electronic information because it was seized by the FBI in an unrelated investigation in April 2021?
Bullshit.
Right. But Howell found that Giuliani failed to make meaningful efforts to explain what exactly was missing or to retrieve it, instead giving, quote, vague and shifting descriptions of the problem. The judge also pointed out that Giuliani has a, quote, self-professed 50 years of experience in litigation, including working as a U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. Back to the judge, quote, given Giuliani's much vaunted experience as an attorney, he plainly should have known better. It goes on, but you get the idea. Howell's her ruling was 57 pages. A ruling of this sort is usually 2 to 3 pages. But she had to explain how negligent and seemingly intentionally prevaricating on what he was supposed to do. She wrote, she suggested it was deliberate. She suggests he was trying to avoid disclosing information that could hurt him in other civil and criminal cases. Duh. And she wrote, just as taking shortcuts to win an election carries risks, even potential criminal liability, bypassing the discovery process carries serious sanctions. So there you go. So Rudy, anybody need a $6.5 million apartment on the Upper East Side of Manhattan? I know where you can get one, but it really needs, you know, full renovation, just in case you're wondering. All right. So there's that. Let me tell you what else is good news about today. And I realized it this morning. I don't know how the day got past me, but 7 years ago, this very moment, well, by now I was already back in a room. 7 years ago this morning, I was on an operating table at the University of Miami Hospital in Miami, part of the Sylvester Cancer Center, having my lung removed. the lower lobe of my left lung, 7 years ago today. And it was at that time they told me, we'll remove it. It looks like we caught it early enough. Two tumors in two lobes, two separate and distinct tumors. They cut out the lower lobe of the left lung entirely in a wedge resection of the upper lobe to get the second tumor out. They were not related. It had not metastasized. It had not spread. We caught it so early that I didn't need chemo or radiation. And after 5 years of clean scans, they pronounced me cured. Now, I still have to go in every year for a CT scan just to make sure there's no evidence, but 7 years cancer-free today. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. So that's good news. Now, the one last thing I'm going to share with you before we get to Will Bunch is not good news. It's really sad, but it goes to a larger story. So it happened again, which with Mitch McConnell, it happened again. It was just what, a week or two ago that he was standing at a podium doing, you know, answering questions from the media when he just froze, right? He, like in mid-sentence, he stopped talking. He went blank. That's the only way I could describe it. He went blank. Obviously, upstairs, he went blank. And to the rest of us, he went blank. And so I'm just going to play this. So this was earlier today. Now, Congress is still on recess. It's August, but I guess Mitch is just wandering aimlessly around the Capitol or something. I don't know what he's doing. Neither does he, apparently. So let me just play it for you, because I honestly don't know what to say.
Running for re-election in 2026.
Oh.
That's right. What? He's just... He mumbled something, and now he's standing there looking like a turtle in headlights.
Did you hear the question, Senator? Running for re-election in 2026?
Yes. He did say yes.
All right, I'm sorry, you all. We're going to need a minute.
What?
Senator. Benny.
Yep. And somebody else comes over. It looks like they're going to try to take him out of there, but he doesn't move. He's still looking like a turtle in headlights.
Okay.
He says okay.
Somebody else have a question?
And now she
please
thinks,
speak up.
And now she thinks he's ready to take another question. Mitch, go home. Please, go home. And take Dianne Feinstein with you. And while you're at it, you may want to convince... Now, look, I actually reject the media... lynch job on Joe Biden. I actually think Joe Biden's mental acuity is pretty good, but the media has drummed it into the heads of everyone what they say on Fox. My thought is, if you're going to call Joe Biden out for being a little slow due to his age, where's the criticism of the former guy? Donald Trump is 3 years younger, and I use the word loosely, 3 years younger than Joe Biden. 77 or 80 doesn't make a big difference. And I would put Joe Biden up against Donald fucking Trump for a test of their mental acuity any day of the week. Hey, while we're at it, let's not only make it mental, let's make it physical. Joe Biden gets on that damn bicycle and rides. He walks. He's active. Donald Trump is a fat tub of lard. 215 my ass. He hasn't seen 215 in 20 years. Give me a break. Now, we'd be better off if neither one of them ran for office. But the hypocrisy here is, if you're gonna criticize Joe Biden about his age, you can't leave dump out of the equation. He's just as bad, I would say worse, on so many fronts. That's right, Joe speaks slow because he's a stutterer. He parses his words very carefully. Donald Trump just has diarrhea of the mouth. So you know what? I'm all for a test. If you're above a certain age, make them take a test. Make them take a test. But it should apply equally across the board. The media's bullshit fixation on Joe Biden's age without in the same breath mentioning Donald Trump is 3 years younger is
bullshit.
It's bullshit. But you know what? And I'm not pretending Biden's not too old. I'm not pretending Biden's not too old. I think he is. I think it was a bad mistake on his part to run again. But here's what I think. I think he knows that Kamala Harris is not the right candidate for this time. May not be for any time. But I think he got himself into a corner. He made a bad choice. He's made a few bad choices. Look, he's far from perfect. He's a lot better than I thought he was going to be. But should he be running again now at 80? No. Nor should Trump be. Neither one of them should be. Nobody asked me. It's not up to me. But if the media is going to constantly harp on Joe Biden's age, they have to, in the same breath, say, meanwhile, Donald Trump is only 3 years behind him. Because at 77 or 80, there's no difference. You know, at 3 and 6, there's a big difference. Some would even say at 15 and 18, you know, there's a big difference. It's a legality. At 77 and 80, they're both old farts. And at 90-something, Dianne Feinstein needs to go home, and Mitch McConnell needs to pull a turtle shell over his head. Enough already. We are a laughingstock, not only around the world, but here. We look at these people and go, what the fuck? Okay. So anyway, that's my little rant of the day. Now, this does sort of, I didn't leave myself enough time to read this column that I was going to share with you. So you're going to have to read it yourself at Inquirer.com. But the column I'm talking about was published on Sunday, written by Will Bunch, friend of the show. And he's joining us right now. Hold on 1 second. In fact, let me bring him up, because Will Bunch is doing. Oh, hold on. I got to take the picture away because we got the actual Will Bunch here. So there we go. Okay. Now we can do that. There he is. Hey, Will Bunch.
Cole.
Hi.
The picture looked a lot better. I don't know.
Well, you know,
go back to the picture.
Going back to the picture. So how are things? You had a road trip this morning. You're in New York. You've got elderly parents that you deal with. That so many people our age have to, you know, it's a no-win situation. Look, I say I envy you for having your parents around so long, but now you're dealing with ailing elderly parents, which is no fun.
I mean, it's something that's really accelerated the last year. I've become kind of almost a two-state person going back and forth between Pennsylvania and New York this summer, but, we're taking care of things and they're hanging. Both my parents are still around at age 90 and 86 between us, not living the healthiest lifestyle. So how they did it, I'm not exactly sure, but they got there. So, and they're still hanging in there. But they need, you know, they need help with some things. So, and it just so happens I'm in a position, you know. I mean, it's amazing. You know, I mean, I don't know how I would have done this 3 or 4 years ago, but now that, for better or worse, I work from home pretty much full time, and I can work from here. So. If need be, it's kind of weird. So it's kind of a little bit like Glenn Greenwald, you know, covering.
Don't put yourself in you're not like Glenn Greenwald, and thank goodness for that.
No, but if he can, write about United States politics from Brazil, then I figure writing for the Philadelphia Inquirer from New York occasionally isn't too much of a stretch. So
yeah, exactly. Okay, so you made it there. We were going back and forth on the phone today, hoping that you'd be there in time, and you made good time.
There was no traffic. It's been a good day. So traffic.
It's been a good day. Rudy Giuliani is liable for the damages he did to Shea Moss and Ruby Freeman. And you made it up to New York in good time and time to be here. The column that I'm referring to is your Sunday column. And the headline reads, "Journalism Fails Miserably." We could probably end there, but it goes on. "Journalism fails miserably at explaining what is really happening to America." And the subtitle is "Momentous Week of GOP Debate. Trump's arrest gets horse race coverage when the story is not about an election, but authoritarianism." The media is really just missing, you know, there's that expression, seeing the forest for the trees. They're missing all of it, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that just frustrates me the most, and I guess it's really the thing that inspired me to write the column, was just that, you know, this summer with all the indictments of Trump and just the inability of, especially the TV pundits and I guess some newspaper pundits as well, but just the inability to wrap their minds around the fact that he goes up in the polls every time he's indicted, and isn't this going to hurt him? And, you know, and all these things, you know, is this an opening for Nikki Haley, or is this, you know, is this an opening for Ramaswamy, and all this, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but like 1988, right, style coverage, you know, I referenced Richard Ben Kramer's famous book, What It Takes, mm-hmm. in my column, because, you know, I mean, these books are honestly, I'm going to date myself here, but one of the things that really kind of got me jazzed as a teenager about becoming a journalist when I grew up was this book, The Boys on the Bus by Timothy Krause.
Sure, I remember that.
Yeah.
Well, we're the same age. We have a lot of the same references. Yeah,
absolutely. And and a lot of people, when I did grow up more or less and became a political journalist, a lot of people I met who covered politics, you know, cited that book or that book. And of course, Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail by Hunter Thompson, which is written about the same campaign, but 1972. And it's just not like that anymore. And you can't fit this square peg into that round hole, which is what, when I watch TV, they're trying to do, and they can't understand. And there is an explanation for this. And as you mentioned in the lead in, that the explanation is basically authoritarianism, you know, that one of the two, you know, almost equally sized political parties in this country has all but rejected democracy. Mm-hmm. And we see it every day, you know, just this week, some of the headlines I've seen about how in Wisconsin they want to just impeach the newly elected Democratic Supreme Court justice just because she's a Democrat, you know, and they want her off and impeach. They couldn't beat her at the ballot box, so now they want to impeach her, you know. I don't know if you've talked about this or how much attention it got, but, you know, in Ohio, where they're going to vote this fall on the constitutional amendment that would, you know, codify abortion rights, the Republicans who, you know, run the Secretary of State's office changed the language to make it sound less appealing to voters, because that's what they do. I mean, you want to talk about rigged elections. I mean, they're either trying to rig elections, they're trying to undo elections, they're trying to cancel elections. And this Republican primary, you know, like this debate that they had last week in Milwaukee, I mean, these events are a farce, because when the Republican Party stops being a democratically oriented political party, and when it becomes an authoritarian movement, you don't have elections, because they have a leader. You know, they've anointed Donald Trump as the strongman leader of their movement. And so And that's why, you know, and like, I mean, I don't find him strong personally, but obviously millions of people do apparently, but you know, so like a strong man, these people who were supposedly running against him are totally cowed and bullied. Right. I mean, you know, the way that their hands shot up,
yep,
when they said they would support him, even if he was a convicted felon, that they would still support him for the president, you know, and the reluctance, I mean, I mean, we've seen, you and I have both seen dozens of Democratic debates. I mean, can you imagine the front runner not being criticized or not coming under fire? You know, we've seen Obama versus Hillary Clinton or whatever. And nothing about Trump Wednesday night other than, you know, Ramaswamy challenging the others to promise they would.
You're mispronouncing his name. It's Ramaswamy.
It's Ramaswamy Ding Dong.
Ramaswamy. Ramaswamy.
I know. Well, I mean,
I can't hold myself.
I know. Because I'm thinking to myself, well, I'm not going to call the guy names.
And then I know.
But the thing is, he's out there calling Nikki Haley names.
I mean, making fun of her name, which is her actual, you know, name at birth. Like, he's criticizing her for using her middle name instead of a, you know, Valtrex, which, sorry, that's him, and her married name. So she's one of those women who took her husband's name. Now, I didn't, but many women do. But he's criticizing her for something that's legit. I say make the name fit. So Valtrex Ramaswamy is my name for that guy because he is herpes and the smarmiest character in the race today.
Yeah, and you know, since this whole conversation is about how bad media political coverage is, you know, I mean,
get down there with them.
Yeah, I mean, just today. Well, actually, I don't know if you've listened to the New York Times daily podcast. No. I listened to it less and less than I used to. But you know, today was their, you know, why is Ramaswamy surging? It's driving me crazy because he's not surging. He didn't get a particularly big bump in the polls because, you know, most people, even a lot of Republicans, had the reaction to his performance that you and I had, which is the guy is just
smarmy
and annoying beyond all belief.
Yep.
And the people who did, you know, cheer him and, oh, he's, you know, he's in their face and he's giving it to those woke liberals. I mean, they loved it and they applauded him. They're all voting for Donald Trump.
Of course.
All of them.
So why is he running? Can you explain why is he running if he so idolizes Trump and thinks he did nothing wrong and he should be he's the greatest president of the 21st century? Gag me with anything.
I do think they're, you know, in terms of, you know, Machiavellian politics, you know, there's one germ of a brilliant idea behind what he's doing, and that idea is that Donald Trump is not going to be with us forever.
Right.
Ugh. You know, and whether it's, you know, the legal system, I'm not too confident, but if the legal system somehow figures it out how to not only convict him, but to convict him in a way that can't be undone in any way. And, you know, that'll take him out of commission or his next bucket of KFC ends up being his last, you know, that's certainly what happened as well.
I'm ready for that. But, you know, Will Bunch, I got the reason this column struck such a chord is you're saying what I've been trying to say in not so eloquent a manner. I talk all the time about opposite world. You know, I have this little clever little opposite world thing here.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
It's opposite world. Nothing is as it seems. But yet you illustrate that here. Let me read this paragraph from this column. Almost on cue, the GOP's Ramaswamy went on CNN Sunday morning with a dark right-wing appeal that is the change far too many people are seeking. And a stunning riff that blamed this weekend's racist mass shooting in Jacksonville, Florida, by a white gunman who targeted black people not on racism, but on anti-racism and the media. Rama Smarmi insisted that the media, universities, and certain politicians have rekindled racism and that, quote, I can think of no better way to fuel racism in this country than by taking something away from people based on their skin color. And you added, meaning white people. It's just opposite world. I mean, come on, man.
I mean, you know, I mean, that's just a horrifically racist statement under any condition. But the fact that it's given as a response to this horrible act in Florida,
a racist shooting, a race-based hate crime.
But you know, it's a really illustrative quote, isn't it? Because it shows the extent of grievance of what really drives this movement more than anything else, which is, you know, this sense of entitlement, you know, that we had it all because of white privilege, because of patriarchy, that if you were born a white man, I think it's kind of overrated myself being one, but these people believe that, you know, if you're born a white man, that alone bestows a certain status on you, you know, that you should be respected and awed because of your birthright, you know, and America was like that for most of its history.
Yep.
And, you know, why have things changed? You know, why do you have now a political party that no longer supports democracy? And the reason is, for most of this country's history, white supremacy, sexism, all anti-LGBTQ, all of these things were the majority viewpoint. And you could and did win at the ballot box by being those things, by supporting white supremacy or white privilege, at least,
right.
And all those things. And times have finally changed for the better, you know, and then went back. Times have changed for the better in the sense that there is a bigger number of people than ever, a majority really. It's not quite a one-to-one thing, but I mean, in a country where the Democrats have won the popular vote in 7 of the last 8 presidential elections, you know, it's a, you know, this is a movement that is younger, that is, you know, growing both because of more young people, but also because of demographics. It's diverse, it's multicultural. You know, it's educated, which is the ties into my book that I came out last year, but education is a huge part of this.
Mm-hmm.
And they are becoming the majority. And this group that held power for 200 years of American history feels that's an entitlement. And if they're losing that kind of power at the ballot box, then the ballot box has to be subverted, right? So that's what this movement's all about. And, you know, Donald Trump came down that escalator in 2015, saying all the things that they had been waiting for somebody to say about those things. When they say they love Trump because he tells it like it is, he's telling them that he's going to support these hierarchies, no matter how outdated they are. And you know, because of the law, what they feel that they're losing, you know, this faction, that the things that they feel are taken away from them, they hate the messenger, they hate the media,
right.
They hate academia, and now that's extended to teach K-12 teachers, but they hate the people who they think indoctrinated their children to feel that way. They hate anybody having to do with the culture. You know, they hate Hollywood because they feel the movies don't reflect their point of view, those things. And these are the people that they hate. And, as a journalist, you know, I've been to Trump rallies and I go to these things and I try to talk to as many people as you understand, because, you know, you just need to put a tape recorder in front of their face and don't confront them, but just let them, you know, let them hang themselves with their own words, so to speak. But, you know, let them explain why they're doing this. And what comes out when you do that, when I've done that, is, you know, their contempt for a certain class of people, and especially the media. And so, and the thing is, I mean, I have a sense, I mean, the media they hate the most is like CNN, right? Mm-hmm. So when you turn on CNN, they're not going to have long discussions about we're covering a political movement that's driven by hatred of CNN. But that's really what's happening. You
right,
know?
Right, I mean, of course.
That's the reality. And so instead they're trying to say, well, you know, they're trying to look at these issues, you know, and this is economic discontent, you know, and look, there is economic discontent. You know, I've been really fascinated by the debate over this song, you know, Rich Men North of Richmond, right? And it's fascinating to me because it's just such a great summary of the problem, which is here's a working class guy. And look, the working class, and first of all, you know, I mean, you and I define the working class in the right way, which is multicultural, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, probably half, I don't know the exact numbers, but probably half the working class in this country is Black and brown people, you know, doing these essential jobs. And there's also a large white working class, right? But the working class has gotten a raw deal in this country. You and I both know that.
Of course. But
that's the point is so when he comes out there and starts saying, I'm working overtime hours for bullshit pay, you know? Yeah, he's right. So the premise, the initial premise of the song is like right on. But then instantly he starts directing that justifiable rage towards the targets that he's been told to hit on by Fox News and by Republicans or by, you know, wealthy people who want to divert attention away from, you know, I mean, the rich men north of Richmond that he should be mad at.
Right.
He needs to go farther north than Washington.
Yeah, hello.
He needs to go to New York. To
exactly.
Wall Street,
right? Hello.
You know, yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I'm not saying.
You know what? Washington. I honestly, that whole thing is over my head. I don't listen to the fucking music. I don't know this guy. I don't care. I was appalled that they began that debate without a question. They went for 10 minutes stating bullshit facts and then playing a clip of the song and asking about the song is the first question of the debate. What the fuck? But again, it's Fox. I thought it was ridiculous.
I thought it was. I thought it was kind of a fascinating commentary that they played that song at the start of the debate, because it said to me, this guy, this factory worker with his guitar is able to say something about the state of America right now that we as news people, you know, getting paid, you know, a few a few hundred thousand dollars a year, either don't really understand and don't know how to articulate. And we know this, it's like, we know this guy with his song is onto something because people are, you know, this song has gotten such a response.
Yeah. And you know what? Last week it was the small town lynching nonsense. What country music likes has no bearing on the American people. I'm sorry. I just think it's a bullshit line of questioning. And the fact that we're wasting.
That's my point, though, is like, you know, if you want to talk about the issues raised in that song, right? If you want to, you know, is the working class getting a raw deal in this country? Are they?
Yeah.
Are they underpaid?
What else is new?
Then just ask the damn question. You know.
Yeah. Hello.
But instead, it's like, we don't really know how to talk about what's going on in this country, so we're going to put this song on for 2 minutes. I mean, to me, that's what it was telling me, and it was
ridiculous.
And obviously it was Fox, so it's not like real media, but you know, I think the same is true of the other channels, you know, and as I point out in the piece, I mean, there are exceptions, you know, you'll see occasionally they'll bring on Ruth Ben-Ghiat, if I'm saying her name
right,
or Timothy Snyder, or they will, more and more there's people saying, well, we should talk about authoritarianism and even the F word, fascism, you know, and we should talk about that in the context of what's going on. But then it's like right back to the horse race coverage.
You know? And that's the problem. It's always the horse race coverage. Hey, Will Bunch, my husband's here. He sent me your column unsolicited. And he's like, did you read this? I'm like, of course I did. Wow. So David, Will, David.
Hi, Will. Nice to meet you. I've been a fan for a long time. And Nicole's right. I read that column. And I knew Nicole was having you on the show. And I said, you don't need to bother Will. Just read this column. It's fucking great. Couple of things. First of all, disconnected from what you two guys were just talking about. Joe Biden should have run for president in 2016, but it was Hillary's turn. Second issue, how does Valtrex claim the mantle of whiteness? Yeah. He's not. Let him go to a small town, to use the country term. Let him go to a small town and see how many people there regard him as a white man.
Yeah, really.
I don't think that's going to go very far. And kudos again. Keep up the good work. I love to read your stuff.
Along those lines, before you answer, are you Will Bunch? And by the way, get Will Bunch's newsletter at inquirer.com/bunch. Just sign up. It's free. You can thank me later. But are you syndicated or are you only in the Philadelphia Inquirer? I'm asking
it's complicated because there is like a newswire that sends my columns out, and it's not like official syndication, but they can get picked up. So occasionally I'll get a ton of emails from Minnesota. All of a sudden it's like, hey, I must have been in the Minneapolis Star Tribune.
Oh, wow. I wish you could syndicate your column, because I'll tell you, for Miami, we dumped the Miami Herald once. Oh God, how quickly I forget. I'm drawing a blank. David, what's his name? The last cut. First, they got rid of I'm just all over the place today. Pardon me. I had a ketamine session this morning, so my brain is a little foggy. But first, Carl Hyacin used to be a columnist at the Miami Herald. He's no longer there. Then Leonard Pitts retired. So there was nobody. And once Leonard Pitts was gone, we dumped the Herald subscription. But they don't have any good columnists down here, and it would be really nice to see Will Bunch in our Florida newspapers. But then again, I'm not going to be in Florida very long. So get into an Arizona paper because we're moving.
Anyway. Well, they could use some different points of view out in Arizona. You know, it's hard, you know, I don't want to waste time with like inside baseball or whatever, but you know, papers like the Philadelphia Inquirer or like the Miami Herald have tried different economic models to save ourselves. And the only one that has the promise of working, and it's not working incredibly great, but it's having some success, is the paywall model. Even though people hate it, but the thing about the paywall model is, for like metro papers, the idea is, if you live in metro Miami, you know, the Miami-Dade area, then of course you're going to want to subscribe because you really want to know what's going on in your area.
Right.
But then if somebody's like a brilliant columnist for that paper, and people in, you know, Oregon or Montana want to read them, it makes no sense to subscribe to the Miami Herald.
And that's my problem with the Inquirer. And I did have a subscription. They offer
a very difficult problem. But that's why I really focus a lot of effort on my newsletter, because unlike the other columns I write, the newsletter does not require a subscription.
Right. So you can, at least we can read those for free.
If you go to inquirer.com/bunch and spend literally 3 minutes,
three seconds.
That's what I was trying to say. If you spend literally 3 seconds typing in your email address, then pretty much every Tuesday, and I hardly ever take a Tuesday off, maybe 50 out of 52 Tuesdays a year, you'll get my newsletter. And it covers usually covers a bunch of topics, including something that's basically a column. So there are ways around it. But we can't really figure out an economic model that works for journalism, you know, and
it's too bad because frankly, I subscribe to too many newspapers. The one now we're back with the Sun Sentinel in South Florida. We still get a daily newspaper here because we're old. But you know, I subscribe because it's my job. The Washington Post, the New York Times, both of which at least once a week, I say, fuck these people. I'm canceling my subscription. And I don't because you need it. And I wind up subscribing to all these other papers, including The Enquirer, when they run these, you know, 6 months for $2 things. And I do it and I make myself a note that on whatever date I need to cancel the subscription so I don't get charged $10 a month because, frankly, I can't afford it. But it's just, you know, media has all been, everything has been turned upside down with technology and, you know, the passage of time. Things are different than they were 30 years ago, completely different than they were 30 years ago. My industry of radio is dead. So we all have to sort of reinvent ourselves, and it's not easy. But I wanted to call attention to your column and your newsletter because your newsletter is free for everyone and the column is behind a paywall. But And this, the column we're talking about was a column.
I mean, you should still try because, first of all, you do get a few free stories.
Right.
Paywall takes effect. And so, I mean, this column that we're talking about from last week has gotten 100,000 page views, which, you know, I'm sure at the Washington Post, they would like snicker at that. But for us, it's a big number for us. And so people are reading it. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't want people to like see a link on Twitter or somewhere for my column and not try and read it because
right. You never know.
Right.
It could work.
It's kind of like playing the lottery. Like, yes. Hey, you never know. You
can, well, I'm going to link to it from my blog today and I may excerpt a few.
And a lot of people are going to be able to
paragraphs.
Read it.
So because it's so important, I think people should. And the thing is, you know, you point out so much and, you know, I on Twitter, I have an angry rant going at Peter Dow. Peter Dow's been a Twitter asshole for years. And, you know, he was against Hillary Clinton because she was too concerned. Then he was, you know, he's all over the place. Well, today,
to work for Hillary Clinton. I know, it's
of
crazy.
Course, right? And he vacillates more than, you know, a weather vane. He's just all over the place. Well, today, he's on a rant about Joe Biden being too old. And I'm sorry, maybe Joe Biden is too old. I think he is. So is Mitch McConnell. So is Dianne Feinstein. So is Donald Trump. I'm sorry, you cannot talk about Joe Biden's age without talking about Donald Trump's age. 3 years difference at 77 and 80 is no difference at all. And I would put up Joe Biden's mental acuity against Donald Trump's any day of the week, and I'll put their physicality against one another too, if you want to take it to that level. But what Peter Dow is doing is not taking into account that this is not about Joe Biden and Donald Trump. This is about what's left of this semblance of democracy that we have here, or a future of fascism. Do you want your kids to grow up in a concentration camp? Because that's where we're headed, because Donald Trump has already said all of his enemies are going to be targeted. Because if he somehow gets back in, it's all about retaliation and retribution. Come on, man.
Yeah,
I mean, I think he nailed it. You know, I guess it was in November of last year because it was right after the midterms. But I never endorse candidates, but I wrote a piece basically saying, look, it's clear that we have to reelect Joe Biden in 2024. And I don't say that, you know, and you know this, Nicole, that he on my list at the start of the 2020 primaries when there was like 23 Democrats, he was like 21st.
Exact, both of us for both
yeah,
of us.
Right, yeah, I know. We talked about this before, and I think he's done a better job than I've expected. He's still doing a couple things that are driving me crazy, but I'm just looking at the big picture, and like the big picture is Joe Biden is the only person who's beaten Donald Trump in a presidential election.
That's right.
We know he can do it. Like you mentioned, I heard you right before I came on, like, you know, we don't know if Kamala Harris could beat.
She can't.
She would certainly you know, it's horrible. It's horrible to say this, but she would certainly encounter the same sexism and that Hillary Clinton encountered.
And worse. Right. And racism, too.
Yeah. And I hate to say that she should be punished for that, but she has other flaws as a candidate.
Yes, she does.
Even though I also think she's done a better job than she gets credit for. But, you know, and they say, well, you know, Joe Biden is aged. He should step down. If he stepped down, there would be chaos,
yes.
You know, because some people will say, well, you have to give it to Harris. And then people, you know,
it would be
whoever,
nuts.
Whoever, Gavin Newsom or whoever would enter the race and a few other people. And there would just be intense bitterness, intense fighting. And, you know, I mean, it would be Hillary versus Bernie, but I think on an even bigger scale and with, well, not bigger stakes because the stakes were Donald Trump all times, but the stakes certainly as big, if not bigger, by bigger, because like you said, I mean, a Trump second term, as bad as Trump's first term was, you know, I mean, there was a lot of buffoonery. There was a lot of, you know, pandering to Putin. There was a lot of bad stuff in Trump's first term, but his second term would be flat out fascism. It would be weaponizing the Justice Department. It would be, quote, demolishing the administrative state, unquote, which basically means destroying any semblance of government of the people, by the people, yeah. For the people. And on one particular issue, because this issue is just so incredibly important, as we've seen all summer, is they've specifically said they would undo everything that's addressing climate change. you know, I mean, it's just there's just so much insane stuff going on, Nicole. I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, how, you know, the fact it's like, all right, well, we dilly dallied about climate and haven't done enough or whatever. And now here comes the summer of 2023 and, you know, hundreds of people died in a wildfire. There's floods all over the place. We just saw every week, this storm down in Florida going in about 36 hours from being a tropical depression to a Category 4 hurricane in that short of time. That is not normal. That is happening because of climate change, because of fossil fuel.
Yeah, nothing's normal anymore.
So the fact that this could happen, and yet you would have a presidential candidate who's tied in every poll for the lead, that you have a candidate who would say, we're going to undo everything that's being done to solve this problem. You know, that we're going to not only not address it for 4 years, but we're actually going to make it worse.
We're going to roll it back.
We're going to try and promote more fossil fuel.
That's right.
Production, you know, build new pipelines, you know, encourage more drilling, you know?
Yep. And because I fought back to Dow on Twitter, of course, now all the, you know, the Cornell West Democrats are coming after me. We want Cornel West. Well, last week it was Marianne Williamson, or it was JFK, RFK Jr. Give me a fucking break. You know, Bernie Sanders was too liberal for them, for the America, you're not going to do it with a nut job. I'm sorry. I used to respect Cornel West, but I think he's gone off the deep end. And Marianne Williamson is a very nice lady who's now saying all of the things that Bernie Sanders says. Bottom line is she can't be elected. She would not win. And we'd get the fascists in charge, which is what I'm fighting against.
Right. Well, people who consider themselves leftists, which I do on some days of the week, you know, but people who consider themselves leftists should listen to the person who is the guru of this movement. And that is Bernie Sanders.
That's right. But now they're criticizing him. Cornel West is now criticizing Bernie. So Cornel, I've got a song for him. I don't know if you've heard my song. It goes out today to Peter Dow as well. And to all the assholes on Twitter who keep messaging me and telling me that I'm the problem.
I just need you to shut the fuck up, cause nobody asked you, bitch. I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Just shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up.
That's what I said.
Bow, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up.
And then I block them.
Yeah, I mean, They're just wrong. And, you know, it's a shame, like you said. I mean, I've had some respect for Cornel West, and, you know, they're making some criticisms about things that absolutely need to be addressed, mm-hmm. but they're not going to be addressed by getting 2% of the vote and handing the election to Donald Trump.
Exactly. Well, that's when we leave. And it shouldn't have to come to that. We can still save this democracy and then hopefully get somebody better in office after Joe Biden. But Cornel West is the answer now. That's a sure way to get Donald Trump back in the White House, because those idiots said, yeah, I'll vote for him even if he's a convicted criminal. We're screwed.
Yeah, I mean, there's only one way to go in terms of realistic options that could actually happen in the real world. And that is, you know, make sure that Donald Trump loses in 2024, which there's no other way to do it than with Joe Biden at this point. There's just not. And, you know, and give Biden 4 more years to, you know, lower the price of some prescription drugs, get some more rural broadband internet going, and get some of these chip factories online, and keep doing the things that aren't the sexiest things and maybe aren't the headline grabbers, but maybe restore people's faith that, you know, government can do some good things. And then in 2028, you know, don't tell me who it's going to be, because I have no idea, but, you know, I think Bernie and Elizabeth Warren and the people we respect I hope they'll be able to pass the torch to a new generation of people who share their.
I think by 2028 or 32, not that I think I'll still be here, but you never know. AOC, President AOC sounds pretty damn good to me.
Yeah. You know, of course, the Cornel West types are going crazy criticizing her.
Of course they are. Of course they are.
So she must be doing something right, I guess. So,
On that note, I'm beyond frustrated, as you can tell. Will Bunch, I so appreciate this column. I will post many, many excerpts on the blog today at NicoleSandler.com/8-30-23. Of course, I remember the date. Thank you so much. My best to your parents. Thank you for being a good son. And even though, you know, you have to go through, I'm envious. I've lost my parents a long time ago, and, you know, good for you. It's the damned if you do and damned if you don't. There's no easy way, but I'm glad you're there for them.
Nicole, thanks so much. Thanks. I really appreciate that. And thanks so much for having me on the show and giving me a few extra minutes. It was a great conversation.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Will. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Will Bunch, everyone. Don't forget, go to inquirer.com/bunch. That's where you can sign up for Will's newsletter, which is free, and you can read full columns. It's no paywall there. Okay. With that, we're done. Tomorrow. Sorry, I get frustrated. You know, I criticized somebody in the chat room who was talking about, well, if I have to pay $2 for an apple, don't tell me the economy's great. And then she said she's voting for Biden. So I said, with talk like that, you don't sound like you're voting for Biden. And she says, I just said, and I'm voting for Biden no matter what. But if you pull a Peter Dow and say, but he's too old, and oh my God, the gas prices are so high, that's not his fault. The interest rates are too high. That's also not his fault. And I think we've got someone in at the Fed who's sabotaging him, because they said they're going to raise interest rates yet again. Not his fault. But if you listen to the re-thugs, when Trump was in office, interest rates were, you know, 0%. Yeah, because we were in a fucking pandemic and nobody was spending money. All right, I'm done. Tomorrow's Thursday. Howie Klein will be here. I don't know how much longer I can do this. See ya.